You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk and show number 333. Today is Monday, May 15th, 2016, and my name is Hamilton. Steve is a late scratch tonight. Curtis, he's out with a sinus. But I'm thankfully joined by you, ever upbeat and optimistic.
Yes, that's what they say.
Bring the homer. We're minus a homer fanboy tonight. but a good week, not a week to be pessimistic. But anyway, before we get started, you can always find us at www.atlantabaseballtalk.com. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk, and check out our Facebook page. And as always, if you know someone who's a Braves fan or a fan of awesome podcasts or both, let them know about our show. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about Eric Ibar, the Admiral Akbar, and what to do about shortstop, the journey to 100 losses, and we'll also talk about what to do potentially with Tehran. But Curtis, first, some amazing pitching performances this week. Certainly the record wouldn't necessarily back that up, but some great pitching. And just a short overview of it before we get into it. It was bookended by two amazing yet unfortunately unproductive Whistler starts. Monday he went 8, gave up 3, and a loss to the Phils. And then today went 7 1/3 with 2 earned, 7 Ks, no base on balls, and really was pulled not because of his pitching, but because for an offensive situation. And we could talk about that later if you want to. Then on Wednesday, our friend Jules Chaiken, Julis Chacin, was traded to the Angels for 24-year-old lefty Adam McCreary. And speaking of the Angels, a quick moment of silence for Angelton. A speedy recovery to him. But at any rate, that trade turned into a Perez start, which turned into 8 innings of 2 hit, 1 earned run, 4 Ks, no walk awesomeness on Wednesday night. And then there was an Aaron Blair start. But then Tehran, 7 innings, 1 earned run, another loss. Fulte on Saturday night, 8 innings, 7 hits, no walks for Fulte, and a win. So first of all, and 6 starts this week, not counting Blair's blip on Thursday, all of them over 7 innings, all giving up 3 runs or less. And the Braves go 2-4. Curtis, your reaction to this week in pitching?
Well, it's really one of the only reasons to watch the team right now is the starting pitching. And with Chacin getting traded, it's amazing how young the starting rotation is, even with Tehran in there.
Yep.
But it's also amazing to watch how well they've pitched. They had a stat today in the game, which this even went down, but since the end of April, the Braves have the 3rd lowest starting ERA in Major League Baseball. It was 2.89, and obviously with Whistler's fine start today, that would go down. So it's the most exciting thing we could possibly get out of any of this, beyond the wins this week. That same stretch since the end of April, which is basically the Cubs series, the Braves have gone 4-10, mm-hmm. Which I guess given their overall record, that's a pretty hot streak. That's winning at a 40 or a 400 clip, which yeah, if we could only be so lucky on the season.
If we could only be so lucky, if we could almost double.
But it does double
what we're doing.
Yeah,
now.
It does make it more tune-inable.
Because
there was, I'm not going to lie, I was checking in on games. I was not really deeply following games for a stretch there. I mean, they were unbearable. They were impossible to watch. And how much Kelly Johnson and Gordon Beckham and whoever, Bud Norris, did you really want to soak up? But now it's back to where you want to follow the team. And I'm beyond even caring about the wins and losses at this point. It's really about watching the young players and seeing how they're developing and seeing what's coming. And obviously the starting pitching is really the basis for this whole rebuild. And so it's exciting that this is off to such a nice start. I mean, it's a small sample, but you just got to hope. I mean, with Folty, that he really has not been able to put two really great starts back to back like that. So that was very encouraging to see, even more than any of the rest of it, just to see him come out and just be overpowering on Saturday night.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, there were so many great performances this week, and it does. I mean, it's amazing how this pitching can actually re-energize your interest in a team, and that you forget about wins and losses, and you really start to follow numbers and numbers of innings, and you really get keyed into that, and you just don't, you know, the outcome is like whatever. It's an interesting way to watch the team, but when you have these kind of bright and strong performances, it really makes it much more compelling. Whistler is great. I mean, for me, you know, for me, Whistler is potentially my favorite pitcher of this season. Tehran is such a badass, and we'll talk about him later. He's just got this chip on his shoulder. He's just angry and focused and so great to watch. But for me, Whistler is the next Medlin. I think he's going to be that guy that's stable, you know, never an ace, always there when the Braves call upon him, when they need him, great in the playoffs, clutch. I'm excited by Whistler. I'm so excited by Tehran. I'm excited by Aaron Blair. You know, I mean, he's, you know, a couple of rough starts here and there, but I think he's got great stuff. And Folty, when he brings it together like that, it's so exciting. I want to see one more back-to-back-to-back start to really buy into Folty. But I'm so close. What about Perez for you? So last year with Perez, he had a couple of these starts. I think there was a start against the Dodgers maybe where he went 8+, dominant, 2 hits, shut him down. I think he has always had this stuff. I don't know if it's more readily available this time. But what do you think? You think he's ready? Is he better this year?
Well, I know that when he last went down this last time, they worked on his delivery some, and I think they also worked on his approach to the game. I know that at some point, even though he's young, you know, he's yo-yoed back and forth between Gwinnett and Atlanta, and I think that they kind of had you can see that he's got the ability. I don't know that he'll ever be a guy that will be more than maybe a 4, maybe a 3 at the absolute highest he's going to ever get. But it's there. And I think that, you know, I think they kind of had to have a talk with him and say, look, you know, I mean, now's the time. Yeah, kind of buckle down and put some things together to string some starts together. It was great. And like you said, he's had some of these starts before. So you never know. I mean, he then kind of regresses back pretty quickly as well. So it's too quick to tell after one start. But yeah, I mean, hopefully sometimes it's just those types of things. You go down and you just have that one less connection to it, and they work on your delivery a little, and they kind of give you the pep talk, and maybe it changes some things for him that at least we can get something out of him, and maybe trade him at the trade deadline or something.
Yeah. And then you can also sort of squint, though, and you see Folty, Whistler, Tehran, Blair. And you've got a pretty good, I mean, that's pretty exciting and young and dominant. And, you know, you throw Lucas Sims in there or some overpowering hurler. I mean, we're starting to see it take shape right now. The offense is far lagging behind, but we are really it's taking shape more quickly than I think I thought it would. You know, I think that I thought this year was really a cast-off season. It was just sort of a full turnaround, and let's really get rid of everything and then sort of reposition ourselves. But it's taking shape right now, and it's very exciting. So speaking of that, Curtis, as we said, starting pitching coming together, that – a rebuild is working. Part of the plan, whether you want to give them credit or not, it's working for them. But the offense is obviously something that needs more work and money just thrown at it. And so at this point, where are you on your trust level of the FO, ownership, the front office, management, on their commitment to the team? Are they really there to see, you know, see this through and get us to the Brave, you know, stick to the plan and get us to championship level back? Or, and I'll just give you another, you know, another option is Jeff, the owner of Liberty Media, Malone, through all this IPO stuff and everything, said that the Braves are really more of a real estate business now than a baseball team. And that, I mean, I think that underpins years and years of what, you know, what ownership means to the Braves and their relationship. So do you think this, that actually the front office will come through with the resources to make this thing really happen?
You know, in my heart, I don't feel like that they are committed to this. If it almost feels like the Royals, you know, I mean, like that they were underfunded by their owner for so long, by David Glass for so long. He didn't, you know, I mean, they had that long rebuild process. And I think that if the Braves can get back to being on a championship level, that the Liberty Media people might pay a little more attention to the product on the field. But I'm never going to be convinced until they prove me otherwise that they are going to be in the business of really developing a big payroll, that they were going to take on big contracts of players that really, you know, are going to be needed to round out a championship level roster. And so, yeah, I mean, everyone should go and look. I love the Braves. I hate the Braves ownership. And I know I'm not alone in that, but everyone should go and read this Bloomberg article about how the Braves organization has sort of swindled a lot of communities out of a lot of taxpayer money, and Cobb County is no different. But Braves are unique in the fact that they own most of their minor league teams.
Yep.
And they have really manipulated the game. And a lot of these communities like Pearl, Mississippi, like Gwinnett, like Rome, and gotten them to build them new fancy stadiums.
Richmond.
Yeah. I mean, and hosed over, certainly. Hosed over like Myrtle Beach, Richmond. By getting other communities to outbid, or Atlanta, if you will, and spend a lot of money and
leave them with huge debt.
Huge debt. And frankly, currently not a lot of product on the field to match that. And so when you talk about Malone making those comments, when you talk about Terry McGuirk talking about the fact that even when they go to Gwinnett, and even when they're in SunTrust Park, which is, you know, propped up by $450 million of taxpayer money, that they're still going to have to see people coming to the stadium in order for them to really consider making changes to the payroll. Well, that to me is a little insulting, because you know what? You already kind of owe them for what they put up as far as a pedestrian bridge that they're paying for, the $450 million that they're paying for to build that stadium. And trust me, that's going to be a lot more than $450 million by the time it's done.
Oh, yeah.
So don't tell me about the fact that we still owe you something for you to put a product on the field. I'm excited about the rebuild more than anything. And it's exciting to see it starting to take hold. And I mean, obviously, again, this is a short sample size. We're getting really excited about 2 weeks worth of pitching. But well, yeah. So, to a long answer to your question, I do not buy the fact that Liberty Media is going to be a group that is really interested in spending tons of money to build and perhaps keep. I mean, the other thing is, if you've got all these guys and all these guys do hit, if you've got Swanson and Albies and Blair and Whistler and Folty and Jenkins and whoever, all these guys are going to be on the major league roster at some point, and a lot of them are going to start turning over around the same time. And if they are all-star caliber players, if Dansby Swanson is the next Derek Jeter, You're going to have to sign him for a lot of money. And I mean, you know.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is you're hoping that that's going to be the outcome with these players.
Well, sure. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I mean, I think the best that you can hope for now is that their interests align, that the interests of the fan and the owners align in a way that for the owners, the way that they see the biggest economic return is by actually following through on the plan, building a contending team, and turning them into – I mean, there are franchises out there that just mint money, right? So a professional baseball team, especially owned by a media company, has the potential to mint money in this environment, right? Especially with the fan base that the Braves have that's so distributed. I mean, I think they really could do it. So – But sometimes baseball isn't like that, and the economics don't work out, and it's sort of a losing game. And so, you know, it's got to work out where there's being money coming. You know, the Braves win, Liberty makes money, the Braves are competitive, and the fans win, right? And the fans come to the games, and they start spending money, and then merchandise, and all that kind of stuff. But I think there is the potential for interest to align in a way that the Liberty could see a return on their investment by investing a lot in the Braves. I think that's all we can hope for.
Well, and the whole premise was that they were going to move to a hot spot for their fan base. And so you hope in the same sense that the fans do turn out. I mean, I obviously seeing these games – and I mean, I'm not blaming anyone. I'm certainly not spending any money to go down to Turner Field to watch this product. But unless we get further on in the year and one of these, you know, it's a really cool situation with one of these pitchers, and maybe there's some guys that have been brought up that's compelling to watch. But you hope that, you know, that they move this and so they can kind of stop using that no one's turning out to the games, so we're not going to invest in the team as an excuse to not invest in the team, right?
Yeah. I don't know. But, the last thing that sort of just gets me is, speaking of the Braves as a real estate owner and stuff like that, and then thinking about where they moved to, that sort of Cobb Parkway, Windy Hill, that whole area, and just it's not the most, you know, edgy part of town. It really doesn't have a ton of character. I mean, you could not really pick a more vanilla, sort of annoying real estate owner or developer. So, I mean, to think about that is just like, that's not who I want the Braves to be. That was a little saddening. All right.
Well, and I think also if you were trying to sell that property of land and you were like, oh yeah, so-and-so, this would be great for huge crowds to come in, I don't know that you would really have an easy sell.
No.
It might take some work to unload that piece of property.
Yeah. All right. So, Curtis, in a bit we're going to talk about fair or foul with the Admiral Ibar. But first, let's take a quick break. All right. It's time for fair or foul, where I throw something over to Curtis, and he either agrees with it fair or disagrees with it foul. So, Curtis, first one. Eric Ibar this season – I hope you're sitting down. I know you usually do the show standing up.
It's true. On a trampoline.
Has a slash line of 182, 211, 215.
Sweet.
With an OPS of 426. All brought to you for a mere $6.25 million a year. Again, poor Angelton. But back to Ibar, not his best season, but he's starting. He is thrown out there. So, Curtis, fair or foul, you keep starting Ibar.
I'm fair. I don't see what other options you have. I mean, Daniel Castro used to be a guy that would come up and hit when he got to the majors, and he's been terrible. He's almost as batting as bad as Ibar is. Jace Peterson, who doesn't play shortstop, but, you know, was sent down to the minors to work on his game, is batting a cool 129 in Gwinnett. And frankly, the only thing you really want out of Eric Ibar is for him to be a trade piece. So you hope that by throwing him out there, that he will get his act together and that he will see his batting average climb to something a little north of the Mendoza line.
Yeah.
And we'll actually bring you something anything back in return. I mean, he has gone on May 1st, he was batting 163, so now he's batting 182. So he's really heated up.
Stop it.
Yep. So I am fair.
No more numbers.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the second that Albies is ready, goodbye, Ibar. Just sit him, right? But otherwise, you really have no other option. Castro, like you said, I mean, at Ibar, you have a veteran, three errors in 273 innings, really just absolutely doing nothing at the plate, a negative 1.3 war. Castro, 195, 235, 208. And a 4.42 OPS, so a negative 0.4 war. So he's actually one game above, one win above against Ibar. But who cares at this point? Who cares? If it mattered, you know, you'd say Castro is $500,000 a year, Ibar is 6.25. So, you know, let's get rid of Ibar and get the value from Castro. But it doesn't matter. We're just all buying time till Albies. So, and I agree. I think the most important thing is in that, because of that, give Ibar the starts and let him hopefully turn it around and draw interest. That's his only value right now. All right, number two, Curtis. As of today, a little math here, because I couldn't find a site that would project this. But as of today, nor could our research staff here at Atlanta Baseball Talk. The Braves are 9-27 for a 250 winning percentage, which I believe, I'm not a mathematician, is 1 out of 4 wins, which roughly means the Braves are on track to win around 40 games and lose around 120 games. I think I got that right. Doesn't matter. They're bad. They're losing. But maybe a more reasonable or equally depressing question is, are they going to lose 100 games? So, Curtis, fair or foul, you think the Braves will lose 100 games this season?
Fair.
What do you got?
That's it. Absolutely. I don't see how they don't lose 100 games this year, frankly.
What do you got? What's your projection?
I'll go 60-102, which would barely clip the, what was it, the 88 Braves that won 58 games and were so bad that they didn't even have to make up two games. True story.
That makes their salary for all the other games a little bit higher.
True story. They finished with 160 games played because they were so awful that Major League Baseball was like, yeah, don't even worry about it.
That's all right. We actually lose money on those.
We don't want to punish anybody anymore.
So I don't think they're as bad as their record. I don't think they are epically bad. They are bad. But
you don't think they're epically bad?
They have faced a very stiff schedule.
It's May, whatever it might be, and they've still only won 9 games.
I understand this, but I think that they're not as bad as their record. I'm not saying they're good. I'm saying they're not as bad as their record. I think they've been a little unlucky. I think as far as schedules go, theirs has been harder than most. I think we'll get some relief and see a little balancing as the season goes on. I think they're going to lose 99. 98. I think they will lose just under 100. I think we're going to start winning series here and there. It's going to happen.
Well,
we're going to have a Whistler and Tehran, or maybe a Fulte Whistler. I mean, we're going to get 2 of 3 where those guys are on, and we're going to start winning series.
Is your concern, and I guess my concern might be that we have the Shelby Miller syndrome that happened last year, where these pitchers are really pitching great and say all the right things and hang in there and continue to go out and pitch well and do all these things while the team gives them no run support and loses behind them virtually every game, like we saw today. And sort toward the ends of the year, these guys start to not be able to hold it together anymore and start to kind of start to impact them.
I think this year is different because we have the pieces that we're going to start bringing up and they're going to start seeing that. And I think we're going to start turning the corner while they're here. It's going to be a little different. It's still going to be a hard season. I think we're better than this. I just feel like, you know, obviously Pierzynski played out of his mind last year. I mean, he's not as bad. I think we're better than this. I'll say that. So, and I still think we lose high 90s. I don't think we lose 100. All right. Speaking of Shelby, sort of Shelby Miller and how we turned him around for young talent. So we've seen an amazing week from the pitchers. There's a case there could be more to be made for the offense. So fair or foul, Curtis, you double down and go all young pitching prospects and you trade Julio Teheran at the deadline for some offensive help.
I still don't. I think that he is still sort of – I just don't – I mean, one, there's the pitching crop of free agents at the end of the – coming into 2017 is really thin. So he's going to be a pretty valuable piece that perhaps you can trade going into the year in the offseason and get a lot more out of it. I just don't know that trading him during the season this year is really going to get you the most out of what you can get out of Teheran. And I don't know that he's still consistent enough to merit that, maybe. But I also think that we do need one veteran presence in this rotation to kind of anchor the thing. And so I kind of want him to be that guy that holds the fort together, at least through the end of the season.
I agree. I mean, unless there's some sort of godfather offer, but it would have to be spectacular, and I don't see that happening. And I think the offensive help is coming. I think we're going to start seeing some of the – it's going to come this year, like I just said earlier. And I want Julio to be part of this next Braves chapter for the reasons you said. He's tough. He's got an edge to him. He's very competitive. I want that to be the model. This young team comes up hungry, and I think he could be a good leader. I'm excited for him, and I'm excited for the next chapter. I really am. So, all right, fair. Okay, Curtis, shot in the dark, crazy predictions coming up, but first, a quick break. All right, welcome back to the show. So it's time for our shot in the dark section of the week, where we make crazy predictions for the week, and then we cross our fingers and see what happens. So first, let's take a look at last week, and we'll start with our listener's shot in the dark. So it came from Jonathan Pettis, and he said, Ibar, Albies, and Swanson will all hit triples this week. The shortstop triple hat trick.
How was this research?
Oh, God, that was fun and easy. The Mississippi Braves are just all over the internet. There are people, teams of people who put their stats together.
Much like here at Atlanta Baseball Talk.
Exactly. So thanks to you guys, Kurt and Steve, for picking that shot in the dark, and then for me getting to research it. What I found was it was a triple zero. Sorry, Jonathan. None of them came through with a triple this week.
Oh, see, triple zero sounds cool.
Yes, it was a triple zero.
I guess. Isn't that an Ice Cube movie?
It should be. All right, so Curtis, for ours, you predicted that the Braves would get to double-digit wins by the end of the week. So close. But yes, as I said, 9-27, one short. Steve predicted that Eric Ibar will hit over 400 this week, which was so close except for the numbers part, as Ibar had 3 hits and 18 plate appearances this week. I said that Teheran would go 7 or more, give up 1 or less, and still lose to Volquez on Friday night. And that's exactly what happened. He went 7, gave up 1 earned, and still lost to Volquez. So I am the winner. we're recording this while Game of Thrones is going on. Sorry.
That's right.
I'm watching it in the background. No.
The winner is coming.
Winter is coming. The winner is coming, and it's me.
Well played.
Thank you. So who won last week? Do you remember? Was there a winner last week?
I don't think anybody won last week.
All right. So that means I am the alone in first for May and shot
dominating May.
Yes, dominating May. A good start. All right, so let's look ahead to next week. So Steve sent his in. He predicts that Blair rebounds and gives up 4 earned runs total across his 2 starts this week. Curtis, what do you got?
I'm going with our fellow high school alumnus,
yes,
Gordon Beckham.
For those of you who don't know, Kurt and I went to high school together, and have
and we
degenerates
we,
ever since.
We've only say this every show. So
do
for
we?
Those of you who don't know, you haven't listened to every other show since they've signed Gordon Beckham.
I don't think we've said it yet.
We have.
Maybe you say your dream show, or that might be the basketball show.
That's a good show. I can fly. I'm really tall.
You still do this podcast?
Yeah.
All right.
Except I get paid a lot of money to do it.
Right.
I have Gordon Beckham going batting over 320 and getting three RBI, which, again, seems really small. But
hey,
why not?
You take what you can get.
Gordo. You
move away from pitching.
Yep.
So I'm gonna take a downward one and maybe try for a reverse jinx here. I think that both Perez and Folty come careening back to earth, with both of them going less than five innings and both giving up four or more.
Yeah, I don't even think that that's really going out on a limb.
Oh, really? That's not. I'm gonna say it's tough enough for all both right. of them. I hear you, but it would be troubling. It certainly would let the air out of the balloon rather quickly if that were to happen this
well,
week.
Well, you know, this, so we can do the show next week when we dump on all of them right. and how the whole rebuild is falling apart on itself. I love those shows.
Yes, we need them from time to time. All right. So first of all, listeners, all you guys out there, submit your shots in the dark. The way you do it is you go to Twitter and use the hashtag ABTSITD and submit your shot in the darks, or go to our Facebook page and submit one there. Get them in before first pitch tomorrow night. We will select one and go from there. So good luck and get them in. All right, so Curtis, we have a trip to lovely Pennsylvania ahead of us this week. Four at Pittsburgh, three at Philly. So give us the rundown on the pitchers.
Yeah, lots of big ERAs this week, which unfortunately means that the Braves are going to get totally dominated the entire time. Williams Perez, first game in Pittsburgh, Williams Perez gets our old friend Jonathan Neese, who is not doing so well this year. 3-2 with a 5.63 ERA, but obviously we faced him a lot when he was with the Mets. His overall record against Atlanta is 9-6 with a 3.08 ERA, so he pitches pretty well against the Braves. The second game, Aaron Blair gets his first start of the week against Juan Nicasio, who is 3-3 with a 4.34 ERA. Then we get Teron Liriano, which is an exciting matchup.
Oh, yeah.
Liriano doesn't look so great this year. He got a 4.99 ERA with a 3-2 record, but that might have to do with the fact that they just played the Cubs and everyone on their team got blasted. He went 4 2/3 and gave up 8 earned runs in the start that he had against the Cubs, which leads us to Jeff Locke, who will face Folty in the fourth and final game against the Pirates. He is sitting at 1-3 with a 5.45 ERA. He is coming off a start where he went 5 1/3 against the Cubs and gave up 6 earned runs. Oh, if we only had the Cubs offense.
Oh, half of their offense.
Yeah. Moving on to perhaps the surprise of Major League Baseball, the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
First, Whistler gets Aaron Nola, who is a good-looking young pitcher. He's got a 3-2 record with a 2.89 ERA. In May, he has got a 1.80 ERA with a 0.8 WHIP, which is pretty solid. Williams Perez gets Adam Morgan, who is 1-1 with a 6.41 ERA. Of course, coming off a start where he gave up 7 earned against Cincinnati, but of course, when he faced the Braves, he went 7 and gave up 1 earned run. So there's that to look forward to. And finally, Aaron Blair with his second start against Jared Eichhoff, who is 1-5 with a 4.43 ERA. Atlanta did score some runs off of him in their start, in his start against them, whenever that was last weekend in Atlanta, earlier this week, whenever it was. They scored 4 runs, 3 earned off him when he pitched against us earlier. So some bad pitching, at least some bad ERAs. But with this offense, I mean, we've seen a lot of guys joking, as we do, get healthy against the Braves lineup, and it's true.
Peter Moreland back against us today.
Looked like, you know, the Peter Moylan of old.
Yep.
Instead of old Peter Moylan.
So before we do our predictions, I was in Philly for work, and the sports talk radio was all about the Eagles and Carson Wentz, the draft, and the Sixers because the draft was coming up. They did not mention the Phillies once, not once, but they still managed, and I was in the car for a couple hours, to two times mention that the Braves were the worst team in the major leagues.
And that the fans are terrible?
Yeah, they somehow – I mean, like it was almost like in a commercial. It wasn't even like the segment. It was like, at Zales, where the Braves are the worst team in baseball. I mean, it was amazing how they got that in without even referencing the Phillies. All right. So Steve sent his in. He said 2-5, although I'm sure in his head it's 8-0. But that's his predictions for the week. He didn't break it down for us. Curtis, what do you got?
You're not going to believe it, but the Braves are actually 7-6 in their last 13 road games. That should be pointed out. It's just that they've only won one game all season long in Atlanta, which is why their record is so awful. Yeah. I'm going to go 4-3.
Ooh.
I'm going to say we're going to split with the Pirates, even though we have not been able to win in Pittsburgh much lately. And we're going to take 2 of 3 from those stinking Phillies, and those losers on the radio can stick it.
All right. Well, I will go with something different just to mix it up. I'm going to go. 3-4. I think we go 2-2, 1-2.
That's what I was originally going to do, but I decided I was not that horrible of a human being.
Hey, you had to fill in for Steve.
That's right.
Yeah, to have the Steve factor represented. All right, so that is the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. You can find us at Blog Talk Radio. Follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and check us out on Facebook. Also, visit our website to post comments in our comments section, and also to read our blog. All right, so that's it for this show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit the problem.